Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Comedy at the Carlson Palace with your host, the one, the only, the amazing Mr. Vinny Paulino. And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, the very, very handsome Mr. Vinny Paulino.
Love to you, Rochester. Welcome to the show. We have a big one lined up today. Colin Quinn. I did that. That was my mistake. Thanks, Steve. Colin Quinn's coming in today, guys. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
But before we get too far this morning, I want to take a minute and recognize our incredible sponsors of the show. Iron Smoke Whiskey, the good stuff, made right here and distilled in Rochester. IronSmokeWhiskey.com, available in two varieties, original Get You Drunk Whiskey and Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey. My man, Chef Joe at Sapori Cafe and Catering. Let me tell you something. We go to lunch there, don't we, Steve?
We sure do.
Oh, my God. The food we love is it, incredible. Yeah. Not only can you go have lunch there at the Powers Building, you could also go to the Tennis Club of Rochester. And not only that, they cater. You can have them for your very own special event, Sapori Rochester. And, oh, my God, it's Rocktoberfest time. It's Three Heads Brewing, my favorite beer. I'm a big fan of the kind, but Rocktoberfest right now, it's out, and it is delish. Threeheadsbrewing.com. Make sure you check out their Facebook page as well, because they have some very cool shows happening at the brewery. So right there in their beer garden, good stuff. And last but not least, boy, am I pumped about this one. We have a brand new sponsor to the show, the good folks at Bad Drip. That's right. Listen, what's that? Yeah. Dripper Glepper, glad to have you as a sponsor. And for you at home, you get in any smoke shop in Rochester. They're pretty much everywhere. They are a national brand. To my left today is my co-host Brian Ball, but holy crap, Colin Quinn is here. You comfortable?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good morning to you.
Hi.
Hi. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you get tired of people telling you how good you are at stand-up?
No.
You're really good at stand-up.
You're really, really good at stand-up.
Thanks, guys.
You're really good at stand-up.
Like, I love
it. It hurts us a little bit that you're that good at it.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome.
That's a real stand-up thing to say, too. You know, like when somebody comes up with a joke that's so good, you're like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Right? You're like, damn it. That was right there.
You know, I have to say, your humor is so great and your joke writing is so great because you come from such like an obvious, plain, common sense place.
I'm a plain Jane.
You are a plain Jane, but brilliant. But brilliant at the same time.
Thanks.
Brilliant at the same time. I was very lucky to watch the show last night, and you have four more tonight here at Comedy at the Carlson. So if you want to get your tickets, call 585-4-LAUGHS. You can get them. They're available right now for tonight and tomorrow.
And how about the big compliment? Did you hear? Was somebody heard coming, walking out the door?
Yeah, it was me. This old geezer walks out.
And tell him what he said.
And he turns to his wife and goes, Carlin was better.
I was like, oh, really? The preeminent stand-up of the 20th century. I'll take that as a compliment. I should have said, sir, Carlin, really? All right.
It was an interesting reference.
I know.
What should be like? What show were you watching, Carlin?
Yeah.
Come on. Now, I'm glad that you made it here. You've been doing the rounds. When was the last time you were in Rochester? This isn't your first time here, is it?
No, but I was here a long time ago. Yeah.
So,
I mean, a long time, yeah.
Right on. So this is Comedy at the Carlson, your first time at this club. Yeah. What do you think so far? Pretty good?
Love it. I love the room. You can just feel like it's a real comedy room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ceilings are dry. Everything's just got the vibe that for good shows, you know? Because that's really what it's about, right? For us, I mean, the show matters more than anything.
Environment, man.
Yeah.
Environment's a big part of stand-up. Yeah. The best part of stand-up, though, is joke writing, I would say.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
best part?
The best part is joke writing.
The worst part?
No! No! No, I disagree.
Really?
I love joke writing, and I love watching someone who writes something amazing put it over.
No, I like that, too. I like watching. Look, I like trying out new jokes. I mean, of course, the best part is always doing new stuff, right?
Right.
But I'm saying, but it's the most torturous, no?
Hey, until I heard you say in an interview once, you said, I'm sorry if I misquote you, but you said, writing faces you to force the fact that you're not a genius.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I hate
love that quote, yeah.
And that's the beauty of the audience, too, in stand-up, is they force you to face the fact, because I'll write something and be like, oh, that's great. And then you say it on stage, and it's like, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, where's the rest of it? You know what I mean? Oh, no. After all these years, still, I forgot the second half.
That's the worst when you're up there doing stand-up and, like, the crowd is not laughing, but they're really paying attention.
Yes.
You know, like,
yes.
It's like, I'd rather them ignore me than just be and go.
Right. You have nothing to blame. Uh-huh.
They just lean over, like, this is quite good.
Yeah.
Limitations.
This is very entertaining.
But it's humbling, but it really is. That's why it's such a great training. Like, people that leave stand-up and they go into whatever, you know, other parts of comedy, and you see them, you're like, how could they not know that that's not funny? Because you don't have that live audience
right.
that we have going, that's not funny, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Stand-up's one of those only things that you have to learn on the job. You can't just
That's the beauty and the horror of it, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you have recently done some one-man shows, which I find to be fascinating because that is a whole different level of preparation, but a lot of people kind of get confused in the difference between a one-man show and stand-up.
Yeah.
How would you describe that to a layman?
I would.
Like Brian.
First of all, it infuriates me. I was just talking about this, how it infuriates me that suddenly my one-man shows are not considered stand-up by even my beloved stand-up community. It was like, well, are you going back to stand-up? And I'm like, it is stand-up.
And, then, and you're like, what the hell I've been
shows.
Doing?
It's just had the exact opposite effect I wanted. It's
no?
Been, okay. Yes. But I would describe the difference only is that it's thematic stand-up. I should have called it something besides a stupid one-man show. It serves me right for using the old standard line.
Yeah.
I should have come up with a new phrase.
Sure.
Which
I like thematic
invented
stand-up.
Something
thematic though. Stand-up. That's what I should have called it.
A thematic stand-up event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One night only.
Well,
directed by Jerry Seinfeld.
Even though everybody would have said, what an ass, it still wouldn't have mattered. Then I wouldn't have to be trying to backtrack on it being one-man shows. But I mean, that's what I would say. It's just, it's one subject that, you know, because you know in stand-up, like if you keep on the same subject after a while, people are like, hey, come on, what else?
Right.
Like, relax. Yeah. Can I talk about this, please?
I have a lot of points to make, sir.
Yeah. Exactly how I feel.
I have points to make.
I have a lot of things I need to get out of me right now.
And in the end, only in stand-up do we still call people sir. You know, excuse me, sir. And nobody blinks. We just like, sir, just be quiet for a second. And miss.
Jesus.
Miss.
Ma'am.
Yeah. It's all fine. That's really funny, too.
Oh,
the way you address people in stand-up. Like, when a stand-up gets really mad, they're like, hey, asshole, be quiet. This year, she calls somebody an asshole. Hey, asshole, shut up.
Yeah.
This is so funny.
But at the theater, it's sir.
The one-man show. Yeah, I've had people in... Well, I did my first show was on Broadway, and there was people, like, they serve drinks on Broadway now, but they don't just serve drinks on Broadway. You can walk out in the middle of the show and go get a drink and come back. So, like, all these people on Broadway going out and getting these drinks, and they sold Jello shots. That was when I knew.
They sold Broadway? Jello shots on Broadway?
Yeah, my show.
It would have made Spam a lot better.
And it's so funny. Because then, you know, when people drink Jello shots, they do get a little bit like party atmosphere. I was like, shut up. I told people on Broadway, I was like, shut up. I can't believe on Broadway I have to tell people to shut up. That's the best part about stand-up, though. You can say that and go back into your act and nobody's like,
sure.
That was weird.
On Broadway, they're like, where is the usher? We cannot handle.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Shut your mouth. Anyway, folks, you go back to the act. Everyone's like, okay, you dealt with that, yeah.
Man, that a New York Story is on Netflix right now.
Yeah.
That's great. That was amazing.
That was my baby.
How long did it take you to write that?
A year, but I mean, there was some stuff there from years ago. You know, like sure. A lot of it's like when I'm doing these shows, I'll find stuff. I'll bring back stuff that I had like left out and
right.
Wedge it in.
So like you pick a theme.
Yeah.
And so like stand up is just, you know, whatever it's going to be. You have lots of different directions.
Right.
And now you're going, I need to take, my theme is New York, how New York became New York. And I'm going
right.
to write a one, I'm going to write a thematic.
I
don't even know what we said anymore.
A thematic comedic.
I feel like you do report. Right now, Colin. Like, you want to just like,
no,
let's leave.
I'm trying to think of like, I just wish I had thought differently about it instead of calling it a one man show like everybody else. But I tried to sell once. I did, in fairness to me. I did once try to sell the idea of a stand-up play. That's what I was trying to call it. It never caught on.
But at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, that's all people do, right?
Stand-up play.
What'd you say, Steve?
At the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, that's like, you know, stand-ups are all doing like thematic stand-up-based plays, and no one says it's not stand-up comedy. That's what all the comedians do. It's a
yeah. Well, it's infuriating that I wasn't.
When Colin Quinn does it, though.
Give credit for inventing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because literally, my friends in comedy have said to me, in the past 3 months, you should go back and do more stand up, too. And I'm like, I've been doing stand up. They go, no, I know, but. And I'm like, oh, brother.
4 more shows this weekend with Colin Quinn. CarlsonComedy.com to get your tickets or call 585-4LAUGHS. Colin. Yeah. Jerry Seinfeld directed that.
Sorry, yeah. Buddy. 585-4 comedy.
Four comedy. I'm sorry.
You're fired.
Thank you. Well, it's been nice seeing you guys. I've had a good time on these 6 episodes.
He has numerical dyslexia.
I got
sorry,
more than that.
Man, I just
you're fine. Mark Ippolito's hanging out in the room. You can't see him, though. So Jerry Seinfeld directed that.
Right.
You guys are good friends.
That didn't help either when I think about it.
Well, why not? Why do you think that?
I'm saying having a director at stand-up. I mean, just imagine everybody go, look at this idiot with his director at stand-up. I'm only thinking of the stand-up community. I don't care what the public thinks of me. Only stand-ups.
Sure, sure.
You know.
I understand that. Yeah. I understand that. So, but like, is it weird? What does he direct? Is like camera angles, camera
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, all that kind of stuff, sure.
Yeah, so.
You know, shaping. He's good at shaping stuff, you know.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll leave that alone.
Now, my question I had about New York stories, like it deals with a lot of like how the different ethnic groups that came in and how they shaped the city. How the hell did you get away with that? Nobody's mad at you about that.
About all my ethnic stuff.
Yeah, like are you just so charming that no one was upset with you about it?
Well, I feel like what I was saying was based on my experience, so it's like I'm not gonna just change my whole. Life experience because the culture is so politically correct now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like suddenly I'm supposed to be like, well, I didn't grow up. I mean, I grew up with everybody and they were exactly like each other. But my whole life has told me, look, the everybody says celebrate diversity, but don't point out people are different, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, that's what diversity means.
Right.
Pointing out the differences in people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I did get away with it, but I was never worried about it because I was like,
yeah, it's presented very well. It's not like...
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying it the way... Right. It's not like I'm trying to say something behind somebody's back. You know what I mean?
I'm just surprised there wasn't some millennial going, eh, he said this, eh, eh, eh.
Yeah, I mean, I get a couple of reviews like that were like The Guardian, surprise, and they were like, well, I mean, you know, he's stealing stereotypes. It's like, right, but I mean, you know...
Yeah, really well and very well. Doing a good job with it.
Yeah, get beyond that. Get beyond what that means. You know, what does that mean, stereotype? You know what I mean? Like, instead of just like... Shutting down all this, you know, it really is a strange world to be in comedy.
I was gonna, you know, a New York story aside, does it affect the way you write for stand up now, like the political climate? Like when you're writing new jokes, do you ever sit down and go, you know, maybe no?
Well, it makes it harder in certain ways for, like, you have to explain yourself a certain way, you know what I mean? Like you have to, I mean, New York story is a good example, only because that was like racial. Other stuff, it doesn't affect you. But, of course, just the culture of, like, where everybody's, like, you know, just, like, automatically sucking their breath in on any subject matter is a little strange. You know?
When you hear that noise.
Yeah, but he's like, whoa, you know, like, and it's, like, it is an odd world. It's a very false, there's a very false tone, I would say, to everything in entertainment right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because you're supposed to be reflecting society, but it's like you only reflect
the positives of every part of society.
Yeah.
It's like you it's almost like a speech in the middle of everything. Comedy too, where it's like, and those are bad and this is good, and it's like just very strange.
You know? Yeah. And do you feel like people lose sight of the punchlines? You feel like the entertainment business is kind of losing sight of the punchlines?
Oh, they definitely lost. I mean, they always had problems with the punchlines anyway.
Sure.
Keeping sight of the punchline to begin with, but now they're, you know, they've taken it to a new level where it's like, you know, because comedy's supposed to be about the negatives and the lower side of ourselves. You know what I mean? It's not supposed to be
It's very uplifting. Self-reflective. Yeah.
Come on. You know what I mean? It's comedy, you know? I always quote this guy, Jack Simmons, who was a comedian in New York years ago. And he used to do some joke about baby Jessica to show how old it was. You guys probably don't know that.
Oh, I know. She fell down a well.
Yeah.
So I think she might still be there. Nobody cared.
He'd do a joke about his father saying, basically, you know, I've been in a hole for 28 years. And nobody. And the crowd would moan. And he goes, come on, folks. It's comedy. Somebody's got to get hurt. And that is true about comedy.
I'll give him an applause break for that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Somebody's got to get hurt. So if you're saying, hey, I ran into, you know, let's say I ran into a friend of mine, a black friend of mine yesterday. And you know what? He suffered a lot. There's a lot of... that's a speech, but that's not comedy. No one's hearing the positive side of your black folk. When you hear what your problem was with him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, so
traditionally in storytelling, whatever the conflict is the interesting part of
that's
it.
That's the interesting part. Yeah. So nobody... people nowadays are like trying to be uplifting, which is fine in drama if you want to be that way.
Right.
But that used to be like the... you know, they kind of like idealize, kind of like, oh yeah, people that are soft, you know.
Right.
And now suddenly it's like that became the standard. It's just, it's not good for comedy, you know.
Hey, Colin, where were you first exposed to stand-up? Like, where in your life did you first, like, realize stand-up was, like, an option?
Where?
Like, how did you come in, like, how did you become conscious of what stand-up was?
I don't know, but I just know, I remember watching David Brenner when I was, like, 13. And this guy comes on TV, and it was the first, I'd seen stand-up before that, and I was always like, you know, like everybody else, I like it. And I mean, of course, I grew up Pryor and Carlin with the guys just listened to their albums all the time.
Those Hacks?
But I remember, was that? Those Hacks, yeah.
Those Hacks.
But yeah. I mean, those two albums, I mean, like four of their albums, I would say. The first album I ever heard of Pryor was Richard Pryor and Red Fox. Me and my brother used to listen compulsively. It was called Pryor Goes Fox Hunting. And the one half was Red Fox doing jokes.
I'm writing this down. I'm going to find it.
Oh, if you can find it. It's like a bootleg, you know?
Yeah.
And the other half was Richard Pryor doing all these things, and you never heard stand-up. Like, it was just him describing a black cop and a white cop going into a black after-hours club. It was one of the bits. And it was just him describing this whole, and doing all the voices, and there was just so much in there where you were like, it was just a different tone than anybody had ever had.
Right.
Where this guy had the balls to just do like whole scenes, all the characters in the scene, and so specific. And it was really, you know, even his kids were like, this is really amazing. But anyway, but David Brenner's the first guy I saw on TV. He came out with an open shirt, brown leather jacket, gold chains.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy's like a cool guy, shag haircut. I was like, this guy's cool, and he's doing stand-up, David Brenner.
Yeah. But, you know, always the coolest guy in the room.
But in like 1973, David Brenner was like a cool guy, you know what I mean? He's out there doing his jokes, but he's like, you know, his open shirt, his chest is exposed. He's got like five chains, brown leather jacket.
He was on a comedy Teen Beat magazine?
No, he was like, and I was like, this guy's like cool, you know what I mean?
Wow.
And
that was your dude, and you saw it and you went, I said,
I want to be like that, but a cool leather jacket.
I want to be like David Brenner.
Yeah, I want to be like David Brenner. And, man. But it just the whole, even as a little, when I was like 7, 8, I see the smoking on TV.
Yeah.
They're like, that's cool. They're like staying up late. You know what I mean?
Hey, Steve, did you just say we had a Facebook question come in?
Yeah, it's actually from Yathan Lex. He says, I always felt Colin Quinn and Dennis Miller did the smartest humor when hosting Weekend Update. Similar insightful style, but the biggest difference is Miller is an arch conservative. Do you guys know each other? Do you get along? And do you find him to be the rare exception of being conservative and brilliant?
Yeah, I mean, Dennis Miller was always a brilliant... I mean, he was a guy that broke the mold of Weekend Update hosts as far as he made it into a stand-up thing for himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, he's really funny. But, I mean, you know, I don't feel like – I'm not one of these people who's going to say he's a rare exception, he's conservative, he's funny. Because, you know, I just feel like stand-up should have no friends. Stand-up should have no allies. Like, anybody that's –
Amen.
That's good.
Anybody that's really arch anything, and that's, you know, if anything, it's harder to be what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because everybody's like, oh, he's too political. But meanwhile, you know, anybody can be political on the other side is fine. So he does have a harder road to hoe. But I feel like anybody that's ideologically, like, rigid is not going to be...
Yeah, it's not the place for ideologues.
Yes, it's a place...
Exactly,
You're supposed to see the bullshit on both sides with stand-up, you know?
Right. But, you know, it's amazing in entertainment, though. People can make a very good living not pointing out the flaws in their own arguments.
Yeah, exactly.
So, speaking of Weekend Update, my favorite Weekend Update anchor, right behind Norm, and I think that that's a very hard job to have.
Thanks for your honesty, man.
I blow smoke, Kyle Quinn. No, I do it to you.
Look,
how do you make that job your own when you go into it? Like, when they say, like, how did they say to you, hey, you want to do Weekend Update?
Yeah, it was an ugly, well, Norm, I just got fired.
Right.
So they're like, well, you know, but meanwhile, it really was a bit, I had the best experience at SNL for the first 2.5 years. I was doing little side things on it.
Yeah.
It was the greatest. And then when they said you could do Update, I was like, this is amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is great. What, one of the ugliest experiences of my life. My first 2.5 years there was my favorite time. My last 2.5 years was terrible.
Wow.
Update was just, it was ugly. I was just, you know, I had a weird, the whole thing was just a weird energy for me, to be honest.
Was it the people around you or was it the job itself?
It was me. I mean, it was just, you know, I wish I could blame it on anything else, but it was just one of those things that just the tone. I felt weird because I was taking Norm's job too.
Uh-huh.
So I felt like I got off on a weird foot and then I just, you know, I kept just eating and, you know, I was just stuffing me into my suits, and it was just a weird. It was just not a great time.
So you were just unhappy in general.
Yeah, and they weren't happy with me. I wasn't happy. It was an ugly time.
I gotta say though, like, you did a great job. I mean, you were very funny.
Thanks, but the only, you know, like I said, Jay Moore said about me once, I'm a dog whistle. Comedians, they're the ones that get me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, could be.
Maybe.
The public could have, you know, they could have hung me up and just been just as happy.
You know, watching your set last night was so, like, cool for me because it feels like every word that you say is just, like, freeform coming out of your mouth. And that is just an impressive skill to have, to be able to go out there with that much information because you're very wordy. Like, you make it feel like everything is coming out, just stream of consciousness flowing. You had to learn to write for that style, obviously, but how often do you go off script with that? Like, because I feel like in your head, you know where you're going and you know how
right.
you deliver it.
Yeah, like, I never have an order. I try to put together order, but I can never think of my order.
Right.
So I get lost a lot, you know what I mean? And then, so then I have to go off script. But a lot of it's all stuff... I feel like I've written some version of it at some point.
Right.
But then I go off whenever I can. I mean, what we love about what we do is that you can go off.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, not to belabor the point. But once again, the other thing that infuriated me about my peers' reactions to my great one-man thematic.
Your amazing one-man thematic event.
Is that they go, I don't know how you do it. Doesn't that suck doing the same thing every night? I was like, okay, let's not...
Were you just going, no, not at all.
I'm saying you're not writing an extra 30. No, you don't even make that much. But it, the point is you can go off in the middle of those shows.
Right.
Sometimes in the structure is the freedom. And you can go off in the middle of those shows because nobody... You're not responsible to another actor. It's not a play where you have to say the lines in order.
Sure. Now, how long was the run of that show?
Which one?
A New York Story.
That run was like, that was a good run. That was like 6-7 months.
Wow. Okay.
And then you sound disappointed. You're
like, no.
I thought you were going
to
say.
I thought it'd be more. I thought it'd be more.
Yeah, I know.
I thought you might have been able to get a full year out of it.
But the point is, I can't get a year out of it because it's only in New York. Right. The show's not going to work anywhere else.
Well, there's a lot of tourists in that city.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, and they should all be going to see comedy. They want to learn something about the place they're visiting.
See the show.
They should have seen it. And if you haven't seen it, you should watch it. Can I tell you the most particularly brilliant insight that I just went, holy shit, he's 1,000% right, and I never thought of it? When you talked about everybody leaving Europe and leaving their countries because they were awful to come here, and we're surprised that everybody in New York is in a bad mood.
Right, right. Yeah.
You just have a bunch of angry people that migrated from all over the universe to come to one place.
Right, the most miserable people, yeah.
Just a bunch of malcontents in one city.
Right.
6 million of them.
No, yeah, I'll definitely never, that was my thing. Like, I loved that show so much. But even that, like stand-ups in general, I was, like, sick of it after a while. Yeah. Even though I loved it, I was like, oh, this is my show. After all, I was like, oh, my God, I got to do this thing.
I really liked writing this, but, man, talking to you people.
I feel like all of stand-up, I feel like every stand-up comic has ADD. Like, I feel like that's a big thing.
We all got something.
Yeah, something.
Yeah, you have ADD, but you're prolific with it, I think. You write books. You're just, like, over here, over there. But the stuff that you choose to do, maybe you're bouncing around, but I really feel like the difference between you and a lot of people is you put 100% into it, and every product I've ever seen you put out has been amazing.
Oh, thanks.
Your books, stand-up specials. Is there a phone ringing in here? It's mine.
No.
Oops.
Is there? it is. That's our whole job. That's our whole life is trying to corral whatever it is in our minds, right?
Yeah.
Trying to corral that and put it in. Because, every stand-up I know says funny things a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, there's a lot of funny things that never get seen. And, it's hard because now this, on the one hand, you're like, stand-ups don't get seen. On the other hand, when it does become a thing where everybody has specials, then it sort of gets saturated. And then you're like, wait a minute, we're missing so many great stand-ups that are putting stuff out, Wow. Whereas in the old days, you'd see a guy like, I don't know, David Brenner. And
very cool David Brenner.
When he was going to do a stand-up set, everybody knew that stand-up material. Like, he was the only guy doing it.
Right.
Right.
Last night we were talking, and you told me that you started to tell me a story, and I politely went, no, please don't tell me tonight. Tell me on the show. Would you please
that
tell me?
That was in confidence. No, go ahead.
No, it was not. Would you please tell me and the viewing audience and listening audience about how you ruined Robert De Niro's birthday?
His birthday party, yeah.
It was his 60th, you said?
60th birthday party.
So this is like mid-90s?
Somebody mentioned De Niro impressions last night, and his wife gets in touch with me and says, I'd like you to come and do this De Niro impression. Because I had done like a half-assed one, on the show, on SNL. This is a couple of years after that. She goes, would you do, just come and do
it? Was that you with Jim Brewer on the Joe Pesci?
Yes.
Yeah.
De Niro came.
God, I love Brewer.
I know, he's great. He's great.
Yeah.
But then
Mark, book Jim Brewer. So
in the works, as we speak.
Then his wife gets in touch. Can you come on and do... So I'm just, when I tell the story, anybody that does stand-up will know, every step of the way, I did exactly what all my years of experience said don't do with stand-up.
Great.
Just so you'll understand, every move I made was the exact opposite of what you would do as an experienced stand-up.
Okay, so let's break it down.
So starting with, she goes, come and just do a De Niro impression. No, I'll do a De Niro impression. I'll do a whole act.
Ah.
Already. So.
I will become Bobby.
Now that's. So now part one where no stand-up would do this is I write 20 minutes that I can't work it out. It's about De Niro. It's specific to him. So 20 minutes that I've never done before.
I'm already
I'm dead, but I don't know it.
You are a dead man walking at this point.
Because in my mind, I was doing so well that at the time with stand up, and it felt like it's such a groove. I was like, this is meant to be. For me to be there, Scorsese's going to be there. He's going to say, we're going to do some new whatever movie I figured they were going to be doing. This is after Goodfellas and stuff. And this guy's the guy with the missing link. This is what I was thinking. I'm not proud of it. I'm just telling you what I was thinking.
He puts Irish guys in the movies every now and then.
He puts Irish guys in the movies. It's just meant to be. You know what I mean? I just realized it was the kismet. It was the right time. Everything was coming together. So that's my first. So I write 20 minutes no one's ever seen. Show up at the gig. It's at a restaurant, right? I walk in, and the wife goes, I'll introduce you. Two.
Oh, no.
Now. Better if I just come out. I do it, you know what I mean? Organic. Do it just so go ahead.
Oh, my God.
Let me introduced.
I'll do it. I'm myself. Hurting right now. Oh, no.
Now, the third part is, so I go up there. Oh, here's the third. I've never even realized until right now the third cringiest part is. So they're all at a restaurant, bad enough. Oh. This actually made me cringe. I swear to God, I've never even thought about this part until right now. Because it was 20 new minutes, I had pieces of paper. I put them on like a table.
I gotta go.
I got my papers lined up.
Oh, I don't even know what to say.
My notes! I've never done it before. I need my notes. 20 minutes of each three sections. I got three sections. Section one is jokes, like zingers, kind of warm the crowd.
Right.
I mean, I had an order to it. Section two was...
my order to my zingers.
You had an order. You weren't an idiot.
Section two is my a stand-up story about, just like a cringy story about my friend who died, who saw a taxi driver.
That open with it.
No, that was going to be like the heartfelt part in the middle. And then the end was me doing like this parody of some kind of parody of the scene in Goodfellas with Billy Batts, but me, you know, just basically, I forget what it was. But anyway, so I start out, I come out, nobody knows who the fuck I am, you know. I'm on the mic talking.
Well, hold on a second. Who's in the room? Who else is there?
Scorsese's not there.
Okay, okay.
Not there. Whew. It's a bunch of big producers.
Bullet bit.
Big producers. Chaz Palminteri, Harvey Keitel, Chris Walken, Billy Crystal. Who was probably loving it. Robin Williams, Whoopi Goldberg, and their spouses. So I go on. I start talking. I go, hey, everybody. I don't know. Oh, here's four, three. Whatever. I don't really know him that well, De Niro. Then why the fuck are you talking? Idiot.
Uh-huh.
But I've seen all his movies, and, you know, he's known for, he prepares for his movies. I go, how'd you prepare for whatever movie you just done that bombed? I go, how'd you prepare for that? By looking in the mirror and staring and apologizing to the audience? You know, all his friends, they're not fucking comedians. They don't know it's a roast. It's not a roast. I go, hey, you know, you gained weight for Raging Bull. You gained weight for Untouchables. Hey, maybe it's just not a great actor. He's just a fat fuck.
Oh, no.
Couple more singers.
Was he just sitting there going, believe this guy?
No, his wife's whispering in his ear, like, and he's like, okay, yeah.
They're just waiting for you to get funny. Like, he's letting a couple slide.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. So then I say, all right, this is not working. He's the guest of honor. What am I doing? I'll zing some of the other people. I start riffing, because I didn't know who was going to be there. I go, this is Chris Walken. What are you doing here? Shouldn't you be doing a cameo in an unwatchable independent movie right now? Now his the girls with them are like, what the fuck? Now I'm on the other side of the room. Is the other? I go, hey, there's Harvey Keitel. Make yourself at home. Take your pants off. Fucking bombing.
Oh, yes.
Go into my second part, which is this horrible taxi driver.
I can't wait till you get to the nice uplifting part where you're like, you turn this smashing everybody into the room and do a tribute to your dad.
Yeah, then I'm like, yeah, my friend, taxi driver. Then I do my last part. I mean, I'm just fucking bomb. I can't even describe the bombing that was going on.
Did you tell the story about your dead friend? And everybody's like, oh, that's what's wrong with him. His friend just
died. I told the story. But it was like, what's he saying that? What? It was just insulting. Like, you know, like I'm thinking everybody's on the show in my mind, you know.
Yeah.
And just, it was just the ugliest fucking 15 minutes of, my suit was soaked with sweat. I wore a suit. Ugh. And I had a shirt, like this cashmere shirt. I had another gig that night. It was just, this is in the afternoon, it's light out. You know, right. Everything's wrong with it.
Oh yeah, comedy is perfect in the middle of the day.
I got my little, so finally I fucking leave. It's just, I mean, I ruined it. And then I walk outside, Robin Williams comes out. Laughing, he goes, oh my God. He goes, I saw you up there. I go, why is Colin Quinn talking into that mic? What's going on here? And then his wife goes, He said, I said to him, go up and save him. He goes, no, he doesn't want that.
Oh, no.
I don't want to be fucking saved.
The good thing was, though, a couple weeks later, Robin was doing the material and doing a much better job with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I'm talking to Robin Williams, and I'm getting ready to leave. And it was raining out. And I'm just gesturing like this, and my new shirt, my nice cashmere shirt, goes flying off the thing, lands in a puddle, and a car runs it over.
And then De Niro was there going, that's funny.
The funny thing was, like, I thought, like, this story's, like, you know, 10 years later. I mean, you know, De Niro's led, like, he's been in, like, 18 countries or 100 movies. And outside the cellar, Jim Norton, we're talking to De Niro and his wife were there researching that.
The movie I didn't know was made.
Yeah. And then I go, so we're just talking politely, just 1 minute, because we happen to be walking by. And Norton goes, remember the time he bombed at your birthday party? But I thought they'd be like, ah, ha, ha. They both got this look of disgust in their face. 10 years later, they remembered that fucking horrible night.
Did you, like, just look at him and smile after, like,
Norton
said that?
No, like, I thought they'd kind of be laughing, too. I thought it was all water under the bridge, but they were like, and they, like, they tried to, like, laugh it off, but they had this disgusting look, and I was like, that must have been some event.
I thought it was that fucking guy.
Jesus, yeah.
I would have closed that event with, thank you, I've been Jim Norton. Have a great night, everybody. I'll see you later.
No, this is off stage. This is just outside.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was saying when you did party, I would have closed with, after bombing that hard.
Oh, God.
I've been Jim Norton. I'll see you next time. Man, Colin, you ruined De Niro's birthday party.
Yeah. And I had such high hopes. Because, I mean, I'm sure there's a moral in there for people. Like, when you know what I mean? Like, yeah, like... My ambition and my delusions got to the better of me, and then I let it affect my judgment instead of just going, doing a 2-minute bad impression.
Yeah.
And then leaving.
Well, and then, you know what? Your life would have been completely different when you saw him at the cellar. Hey, I remember this guy does the imitation.
Right.
It would have been like a hug and embrace.
It was also because I didn't do a very good De Niro impression. Even though I could be able to.
Well, you didn't do a very good act 20 minutes either.
No,
so.
No. But I'm saying I didn't do it, so I was kind of trying to overcompensate for my mediocre De Niro impression.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely a lesson there for anybody who's ever thinking of doing comedy.
Yes.
Prepare.
Don't.
Prepare, but you can't. And what you were saying, you can't do it unless you're on stage.
Right. You're right. So I'm getting the high sign to wrap it up today, Colin. I can't say thank you enough.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to the next 4 shows, tonight.
Yeah.
To tomorrow. Get your tickets. What's the number, Mark?
585-4-COMEDY.
585-4-COMEDY or carlsoncomedy.com. Also, folks, make sure you check out our new website, carlsoncast.com. I want to say thanks to our sponsors today, Iron Smoke Whiskey, Sapori Cafe and Catering. Here we come. We're going to get some delicious food. Place is great.
Amazing.
Three Heads Brewing. Make sure you check out threeheadsbrewing.com. They have a lot of great music events happening in the beer garden coming up in the next few weeks for Rocktoberfest. And, of course, our new sponsor, the good folks at baddriplabs.com. Follow them on Instagram. And make sure, if you're going to smoke, make it a bad drip. Colin Quinn, you've been incredibly gracious. More
Thank
so than we deserved,
time.
And we really appreciate it. Thank you. And we'll see you next time, Rochester. See you at the shows. Thank you. Good night.
Woo!
I keep saying good night.